Hi, welcome to the UCB Theater New York podcast for the week of January 31st. You are Will Hines.
Yep, that's right. And let me guess, you are John Frusciante.
You guessed correct.
Oh, good.
Pick a stuffed animal from the rack here.
I'll have the large pink alligator.
There you go.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Bye.
We are going to talk to you about some things. You know what this is.
Yeah, stuff at the. We talk about shows happening at the UCB Theater in
New York
this week.
Yeah.
Then we bring in someone to interview, which this week is going to be Andrew Rocco.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume this is for Andy Rocco's hipster show.
That is correct.
And then in the third segment, John and I will blabber.
Yeah.
Incessantly about some topic that we have opinions on.
Yeah, it's going to be really controversial.
Biting.
Riveting.
You'll probably read about it in the Huffington Post. And we'll gawk the shit out of us.
Yeah.
So that'll happen later. So that's what we're going to do. So let's start with the shows this week, John.
Okay, so Monday we have a show. Tonight we have a show that I'm very excited about.
Oh, my God.
Partially because I'm in it. Partially because it's about one of my favorite things in the world.
Right.
It's the Lost Dharma Initiative Company Picnic.
Okay, so this is tonight, Monday at 9:30.
That's right. And this is hosted by Sidecar. It was a brainchild of theirs.
Uh-huh.
And
the sketch group Sidecar.
The sketch group Sidecar.
Alden Ford, Justin Tyler, Matt Fisher.
You got it
God
right.
God bless them, yes.
And
they've let you be involved in this, even
though
you
allowed
are
me. I begged
obsessed
to be.
To a psychopathic degree. They still thought it would be good to let you in.
Even though I'll probably just wind up taking over the whole show.
You'll remove the comedy of it and just sit down and have an earnest discussion over what's going to happen in the last
season.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And what it has meant to me.
And so what happens here? Y'all just going to sit around and people like me who don't see the show, we're going to just be annoyed with you?
You know, it's people like you that are what's wrong with the world. this is a bit show. It's a collection of different characters and bits.
Yeah.
Revolving around the TV show Lost, which premieres this Tuesday, February 2nd, tomorrow.
Right.
Oh, God, why am I even here?
You should be home
tailgating.
Getting ready. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get a tailgate for the Lost show.
So this show is, the premise is that it's the Dharma Initiative Company Picnic.
Right, and they're like the little Illuminati Uber science group that controls everything.
Yeah, to a certain degree.
Okay, just help me out.
I will. So the premise is that this is the Dharma Initiative annual company picnic.
Yeah.
And there's going to be different groups of acts and people coming to...
Sort of inspired by things from Lost.
Right.
That's pretty good. I'll say this. These topical shows are usually like sold out, huge party atmospheres.
Yeah. This show is almost pretty sold out.
Yeah.
There'll definitely be standby.
Standbys will get in, but it's going to be like full house, mm-hmm. which should be great. I know like when Achilles did his Harry Potter talk show, it was like 10 million people in the UCB theater.
Yeah.
And I feel like I was going to say another one, but I can't remember what it was. We did another like Friday midnight, like topical show. I think it was Twilight. It was like the Twilight
show. Yeah, the Twihards Anonymous show.
Right. So this will be another like.
And this is going to be, similar kind of thing where a bunch of people who are super enthusiastic about the show are going to be coming together and doing bits about it. Like we have people are coming in to play Hurley's love children. Hurley is one of the characters on Lost.
Yeah, he's the big dude.
Yeah, I will be playing Alvar Hanso, who's the head of the Hanso Foundation
so
that funds the
already.
Dharma Initiative.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm excited about it. It's going to be a lot of fun. So if you like Lost, you will want to see the show. And if you don't like Lost...
We don't want anything to do with you.
I don't want
to. We don't approve
you
as a human being.
I don't understand your mental makeup.
How can you
makeup?
Be in America, which therefore means
right.
you like television,
I mean,
and not like this show?
Do you not like drama and mystery?
Do you not enjoy breathing air in and the satisfaction of it being processed through your blood?
Right. Yeah.
Do you not just enjoy basic primal human happiness?
How long can you go without water?
Get to the show. All right. Tuesday at 11 o'clock at night, there is a show called Groundhog Day.
Yes.
$5. Good deal.
Yeah.
What is happening with the show?
So this is an improv show that was, Rebecca Drysdale's idea.
Okay.
And they'll be doing an improv show based on the movie Groundhog Day, because tomorrow is Groundhog Day.
Oh, right, right.
I know, Will, you've been very involved in those PETA protests.
Yeah, I just feel like, can we just please take these animals seriously and just not belittle them? But that's a separate topic.
Of course. So this is an improv show based on the format of the movie Groundhog Day. So you'll see one scene, and then you'll see that scene repeated
Ooh,
a bunch
cool.
of times by different people in different ways. And it involves an all-star cast of improvisers, Neil Casey, Rebecca Drysdale, Jim Santangeli, Anthony Atamanik is in this as well.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's a bunch of people, a bunch of great people.
Love
yeah,
it.
And that's after Harold Knight, so you'll probably already be there.
Yeah,
stick around.
Becky Drysdale is one of the funniest people ever.
She's definitely putting
the show together. It's going to be great.
Yeah. Let's talk about Thursday because I just want to say that you are in cage match again for like the third week in a row.
I'm all over it. Like,
what are you doing?
Well, what happens is I've been here for 10 years and I'm using the influence I've accrued to just put myself in every show. Once I'm in every show for the whole week, I'm out. You'll never see me again once I achieve that.
Okay.
Because the tournament just ended this past Thursday. Tournament ended. The Brother Signs lost to the awesome Ruru, Death by Ruru.
It was a great show. You put in a valiant effort.
Thank you. We were thrilled to be there. And so, but now we're returning to the regular season, and we were the last champions. So we're going up against Law Firm.
Mm-hmm.
Heavy hitters.
Yeah.
Law Firm's a hilarious and awesome team. So we just had to be humiliated by Death by Ruru only to be sent into the arms of the Law Firm. So...
Well, you'll definitely come out scrapping.
Yeah, I think I'm excited about it. Am I? Yeah, I am.
Yes, you definitely are.
And so that's Thursday at 11.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then Friday the 5th, this Friday, is the beatdown.
Okay, this is Shockwave and Eliza Skinner's rap battle show.
Yeah, it's a great show.
Yeah.
Have you seen it? You've seen it.
I have seen it. It's hilarious. They invite guests to rap,
mm-hmm.
and they have like there's like a certain amount of time, and you have to freestyle.
Yeah,
and then the other person freestyles. And I think the audience votes on who goes on to successive rounds. But
yeah.
The fun part is they always pick somebody from the audience, at least one or maybe
one
two.
One person.
Yeah,
from
one
the
person
audience.
From the audience is one of the contestants.
Yeah.
So when you hear crowds before the show talking about like, oh, I'm so scared. I don't know if I should put my name in the hat to be that person. That person almost always makes a serious threat at winning the whole thing because the audience is squarely behind their man, like whoever it is that came out of the audience.
It's a thing of like the way you present yourself because I've seen people present themselves as cocky jerks.
Yeah.
And then they don't back it up.
Yeah, right.
And it doesn't work. But if you present yourself as kind of the underdog kind of thing and then you make a pretty
valiant effort. It's the weird
thing
where you're being yourself and doing your best. They love you so much. Mm-hmm. It's a huge rush.
Yeah.
And the guests are always great. Shockwave is really good at a very specific skill that
he's amazing.
Has worked for years at.
Mm-hmm.
And Eliza is hilarious, and the show is great.
Yeah.
It's a big hit.
It is.
It's a hit single, I
say. I've done it. I did.
Really?
The
you did it? They let you in this?
They did. I lost to Hannibal Buress.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's no shame in losing to Hannibal.
Yeah. And then afterwards, I thought of all the things that I should have said.
Right.
I had that spirit of the stairs moment
where
I was like, should have called him out on this. but it's a lot of fun.
Every time I see when I walk through the theater and that show is going on, everyone in the audience is like grinning from ear to ear. Like they love it.
Yeah.
So
who doesn't want to see stand-up comics freestyle rap?
It doesn't seem like the kind of thing that people would be asking to happen, but everybody loves it.
Yeah.
So that's Friday at 11, the beatdown. And then Saturday at midnight, we have Andy Rocco's Hipster Show, which is his talk show / satire of hipsters. I guess not really satire anymore because he is kind of turning into a hipster.
I think so.
We'll
the more he does
Andy
the show,
that.
The
we'll
more
talk
he...
talk with Andy about his identity changing over the years. Where does the joke end and the real Andy Rocco begin?
There's really no way of knowing.
Yeah. So we'll find out in the next segment.
Yeah, so he's going to come in and talk about that.
So that's Saturday at midnight.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot of good shows.
Another great week at the theater. Jesus.
Wow. Some week we should come in here and just say like, ugh, these shows are all terrible.
Yeah, we should.
Oh, what a horrible. And we should.
Yeah,
you know,
why are we even putting this up?
Yeah. I mean, part of being a comedian is having that kind of negative, judgmental attitude.
Mm-hmm.
So we should let it
Cynicism.
Out sometime. Yeah, that's right. That is... looking down on something as a way of feeling strong about yourself.
Yeah, that's my whole philosophy.
That's my self-help book. It has
it's
sold
great.
No copies.
Okay, so I guess we will be right back with Andy Rocco. Stick around.
All right, and we're back. So in the studio with us is Andy Rocco.
Hello.
Hello, Andy.
Hello, Andy.
And he is the creator and or co-creator and star of Andy Rocco's Hipster Show.
Yes.
Yeah. So tell us about the show, Rocco.
It's a late night talk show, like kind of like how The Tonight Show is, but it's a hipster themed talk show.
I'm not familiar with The Tonight Show. Is that
No, I've never heard of it.
It's like one of these sort of like
It was on TV for a little while, and then it was a late night show. It changed hosts.
Okay.
And,
like the Jimmy Kimmel Show?
Yeah, it's like the Jimmy Kimmel
Okay,
Show.
I got that.
Yeah, I watch that.
But it's like that, but it's a hipster theme. It's all about what's cool and trendy, and we have musical guests dancing. It's a lot of funny little bits in between, and this show is going to be really exciting. I'm going on a date during the show.
Exciting for you.
Yeah. the girl that I'm going on a date with, her name's Erin Cole. And okay. She was on All My Children.
Really?
Yeah. And
how did you get that? You're going out with a soap opera star?
Yeah. And I met her off Craigslist.
What?
Yeah. And she is, she's like really attractive.
No doubt, man. Yeah. The only thing about soap opera shows is like everybody on those shows is beautiful.
Yeah. That is the number one prerequisite for being on a soap opera.
The weird thing about soaps in general is that like these people like get together and fall in love in relationships, but no one ever has any actual happy moments. Everyone's like constantly.
Yeah. It's always like disaster and like tragic and haunted.
Yeah. I just don't know why people are just like fighting for each other.
The other cool thing about it is if the date doesn't work out and she breaks up with you, she could always magically reappear in your life like 5 years later with a loose explanation of why it's happening.
Yeah.
So let me get this straight. You put an ad on Craigslist saying, come be on a date with me at my show at this comedy theater. And Erin Cole said, I'm up for it.
Yes. At first I put it in the actual personal section.
Yeah.
And I got nothing but porn ads. and then I put it up on the talent actress section because it's not inconceivable that I would date an actress.
Right.
So I figured, but I was like, you have to take this seriously. You have to consider this might work. I put a bunch of specifications that you have to be a woman.
Yeah.
Not in a relationship unless you're in a relationship with a woman.
In our era of reality shows, I feel like people they get it and they are ready to be in a thing that is for real, but also being done for like entertainment.
Right.
So is the date happening during the show?
During the show. She's going to help me co-host the show. And she's going to
I love it.
Yeah, she's going to help do the little, like the up top bit where we talk about the news. She's going to be part of that. She's going to interview the guest. Our musical guest is Vic Thrill, who is this really awesome musical guest I always liked since college. And he has his solo career right now. And he's like really amazing. Like, if you want to see something really amazing and unexpected for music, come see Vic Thrill that night. It's going to be pretty trippy and fun.
Cool.
So you also have on stage with you have Stephen Slate, who's DJ Snob, right, in your show?
Yes.
And you also have
Steve Dressler,
a.k.a. Slogan.
Yes. Who draws the entire show.
Yeah, both great.
Yes.
Let's talk about both these guys. Steve Dressler, we talked about last week, does graphics for a lot of the shows at the theater and is super talented, funny dude. He's been on good indie teams. And what are you grinning at me for?
No, just go ahead.
What's the matter? Why are you laughing?
I just love you. And,
and then Stephen Slate is... He came up with the idea for the show with you.
He came up with the idea of the show. He's like, you know, you like to collect vinyl records and you're kind of, you know.
Stephen Slate is fascinating to me. He is like the evil genius, not evil, but he is like the quiet genius of the theater. He sort of is content to sort of sit there and not fight to be in the spotlight, but be thinking of cool things. He's also an overt conservative, which is rare in our hotbed of liberalism. Yes. Like him and Matt DeCoster, not that many of the people I know are sort of like,
right.
I mean, I was going to say wear it on their sleeve. He doesn't really wear it on his sleeve. Like, he doesn't go picking for fights.
Yeah, he doesn't, but he will definitely espouse his opinion. Right.
Yeah, when there's a lot of people, like, going nuts over something, he'll be in there and be like, well, actually, it is socialized. If you do. Like, he'll be totally happy to, like, pop whatever balloon he doesn't agree with.
And that's – I like to have a mix of different friends.
Yeah.
I like to have – because I have, like, no opinion. I just basically take
– I don't agree with that.
I don't.
You have lots of opinions.
Really?
Yes, you're an extremely opinionated person.
Remind me of one of my opinions.
I don't know, but like, I just know you always have something to say about stuff.
Well, maybe.
Stephen Slade he's the DJ on your show. He's a great DJ.
Yeah. Legitimately, like a really great
DJ.
Yes,
he is.
Yeah.
And you, Rocco, have good taste in records also. Like,
Yeah.
I know that you've, I just from your Facebook videos, I know that I've seen a lot of your album recommendations, and they're legitimately like cool and fun stuff that you would dig up like at a WFMU record sale or something.
Also an example of the opinions you have about things.
Yeah.
Yes, you have distinct opinions. Vic Thrill, your opinion on Vic Thrill is a real opinion.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I do love Vic Thrill. He was like, when I was in college, I was just like, I want to find something that's like me, because my friends were all into Rush.
I was just like, wait, when did you go to college? In 1977?
No, they just like, you know how Rush fans are.
No, I do. Yeah, they are.
They're generational.
They're sort of immortal.
Yeah, so like, all my friends were really into Rush, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to be, and I found this group. At the time, he was singing for this band called the Bogmen, and I was like,
oh, I know the Bogmen.
Yeah, and he's like, I was like, I like this band. They're like fun, and they're not like pretentious. And
Their album is great.
Yeah, and I was just like, I got into them, and then I got into Billy Campion and became Vic Thrill, and then that's who I like. So it's really exciting to have this guy on the show. We also have Rob Cantrell, who writes for High Time.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to do stand up too.
Yes.
And that's exciting. And we have a lot of other surprise guests too. So everybody who is anybody should come see the show.
So let me ask you this. Now, this show is a celebration of hipsters and hipsterism, or is it a referendum about what being a hipster is?
Two good words.
It's, I like to think of it as both. It's just like, people are constantly like wondering about what hipsters are and everything. I think it's just like, I'm just going with the term hipster in the sense that it's like, relating to cool things. Like, I just want to do a show that is just cool because...
But Steven and Steven are, like, they're parodies. Like, DJ Snob and Slogan.
Yeah.
Those names are picked to make fun of hipsters.
And every day I get up, I am a living parody. So.
I was going to say, I've known you forever. We were on an improv team for years, Monkey Dick, and we've known each other for a long time.
We worked together.
That's right. We did a commercial together.
Your shirt on.
That is nothing special. I've taken my shirt off more than Richard Gere at this theater, which is not good for anybody. But over the years, I feel like I've seen you change your like visual identity like several times.
Yeah.
Like you're like Madonna, but schlumpier.
Only slightly schlumpier.
Yeah. But just as sexy.
Sure.
Yeah. I just wanted to...
Well, I feel like when you showed up... I'm just going to go through this. I feel like when you showed up on the scene years and years ago, you were like the kind of like overweight, like, and kind of like deliberately like schlumpy dude, like kind of like sad sack, like sort of like, oh,
you definitely cultivated that.
Yeah. I'm still that.
But then you dropped all kinds of weight for a while. You got to be like crazy, scary thin. That's when Curtis Quinn was calling you the machinist.
Yeah.
And and you sort of got like extra cleaned up, and you sort of moved into like a preppy mode. You're from Greenwich, Connecticut, and you almost started to look like it, which is not like you at all.
I know.
For a while.
But I go through a lot of phases, you know. But everybody has to. Like,
why do we want to be
the same boring Will Hines? I mean.
Oh, sure. All right. But don't even try to get this on me. But like now you. But now you look more and more like Del Close than anybody. I mean, I didn't know Del Close, but I see.
Been saying I look like
no
Mark David Chapman.
You do.
I was going to like put up his picture on like because on Facebook.
Yeah, don't do it. You don't want to attract like people.
Yeah, but
because it's doppelganger week.
Yeah,
on
it's
Facebook
doppelganger. Yeah, so like, but I was going to do that, and I realize I don't really look that much like him.
No, with the glasses though, you do
and
though.
And the beard.
And the smile, you have the same kind of smile.
That's one thing everybody knows about Mark David Chapman is his killer smile.
Well, he does in the few pictures you see of him around that time, he's always got that like kind of creepy LSD spaced out grin.
Yeah.
thanks, I got that kind of smile.
Well, you know, I was going to say, like, now that I can't get Chapman out of my head, but you look more, to me, you look more like kind of a stoner hippie, like, assistant professor who, like, wanders late and he's like, hey, man, forget the rules. The only books I'm going to assign you are written on these scrolls or something.
Today we're having class outside.
Yeah.
That's the kind of, your current persona.
We're going to have class at my off-campus apartment today.
Yeah.
It's all right, we smoke a doob, right?
So I think if Dressler and Slate are sort of parodies of hipsters, you are. You have become sort of a bohemian person.
Yeah, and I am most definitely. I would like to probably be the only person that will admit that they're a hipster.
That's, yeah.
But, like, because everybody...
Nobody wants to say they're a hipster. They just want to make fun of what they think a hipster means.
Yeah, if this show, if Gothamist got wind of this show, forget it. The user comments would be through the roof.
Yeah, they'd be blistering.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't think it's that bad. It's just somebody that, like, if you really think of the most negative thing that you think of a hipster, right?
It's nothing that bad.
It's nothing that bad, but it's just like, it's just essentially most people, the most negative thing, people are like, a hipster is just some dork who's just trying to be cool.
Trying to be cool, right.
And I'm a dork, and I'm trying to be cool. And, like, this is what I think cool is, and if you like it, you like it. You don't, fuck you.
Well, I think, Andy, you're one of the best hosts. You're one of my favorite hosts of anything.
Thanks.
Whenever you host Herald Night or Maw Night, thank you very much. I don't think that's true, but I
think you're a mediocre host. And I love Frusciante.
Oh, you know. Thank you.
Yeah.
I think I'm a great host.
And I've seen the Hipster Show, and it's great, and I think you're like, you've got a good knack for being yourself and being in touch with, like, natural things you're thinking of at the time, and you're very likable, and you're sweaty. In a way that makes you accessible.
Wow.
That's what makes people accessible to Will. The more they sweat, the more he sees their humanity.
I really thank you for really promoting my show right now. I feel like I owe you guys like a blowjob or something.
No, absolutely.
We don't need a blowjob.
Yeah, not especially not from you.
Lord.
Is this too long?
No.
Yeah, we're about there.
You also, I just wanted to mention, have a great staff of writers on the show.
Oh, my God. I have a guy, Patton, Lee Rubenstein, John Robert Wilson, Stephanie Streisand, Steve Dressler, Steve Slate.
Frank Hale writes
Frank
for you guys,
Hale
I think.
Writes for us, too. Mo is writing for our show, too. And,
oh, wow.
We have, like, a plethora of writers, and we...
Like a real show.
Yeah.
I know, yeah.
You have Bethany Hall working on the show in some capacity,
too,
right?
Yes, she's our stage manager. She keeps things on track.
We could use her right now.
Yeah.
Yes, we need somebody keeping track.
We're going to wrap this up.
Yeah.
So that sounds great. And so thank you so much for coming on.
I'm going to give you guys both a kiss.
Okay, just you don't need to express your thanks in sexual favors of any kind.
No, stay
seriously?
On that side of the table.
Okay, all right. I just, Valentine's Day is coming up,
So the Andy Rocco's Hipster Show is this Saturday, February 6th at midnight.
Check it out. And stick around, and John and I will be right back to ramble about some improv topic. Thank you for coming, Andy.
See you later, man.
And we're back on the UCB Theater New York podcast. And this is the segment where we have a discussion about something that's going on in the improv community or some improv idea.
Or just some topic that interests us just something. So we want to say, if you have any ideas for this segment or any ideas for any segment in the show, please email us. What's our email address?
It's ucbtnypodcast@gmail.com.
Right. So send us something there. We also have a forum. Pat Baer set us up a forum on the UCB Comedy message boards, boards.ucbcomedy.com. I said that quickly. boards.ucbcomedy.com.
Right.
So any suggestions for topics here or responses to things we've said before, if you think we're way off on something or you just want to chime in and give another example or a new, let us know.
Yeah.
We'd love to hear any suggestions for these things.
Yeah, the discussion continues online, as they say.
That's right. And this week we want to talk about long-form improv and how when you're putting on a show, you can make it accessible to people who've never seen long-form improv before.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what makes a long-form improv show work for someone who has never seen it, doesn't know anything about it, hasn't taken a class, or is predisposed to think it's funny already?
Right.
How does it work? And the reason we bring this up is I think, like, that's the final barometer of you making it as a successful improviser, is that the show should just be funny and entertaining to someone who has had no preparation for it.
Right.
It should work.
It should look like a written show that was prepared, or people should not be able to tell the difference.
Well, let's talk about that. That's one thing. That is one aspect of it, I think. Yeah. Like, the reason we push finding a game so hard in our classes is usually that means it gives you the discipline of deciding, what is this scene about? And here I'm going to show the audience that all the things in the scene are about this one interesting idea that we discovered in front of you.
Yeah.
And much like a written piece usually has one central idea that's driving it. And that's why in a really funny improv show, people are like, oh, that must have been written down. You both got on board so quickly with this thing and pushed it. You must have decided beforehand that that's what it would be about.
Yep.
That's a huge compliment to an improv show, is they can't believe you didn't decide before.
Yeah. I think it's also like, it boils down to truthful, being able to play truthfully, being able to play honestly, being able to commit to things and play truthfully. You know?
It's the two hardest things to learn, I think, because if you fail at either one, there is a lower, lesser version that still gets some laughs. There's like false victories.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you play completely goofy and broad and silly and cartoony, like with big voices and you're making like big silly like you will get a reaction from the audience.
Sure.
Like they're happy to see clowning. You'll get something.
Right.
And you can feel like, oh, thank God. Like mm-hmm. they're watching. Like it's working. But it's limiting. Like they're not actually going to be that it's just the novelty of making stuff up and you being bold and silly. It's no different than being like an enthusiastic karaoke singer at that point. You're like, wow, that person's really willing to make an ass of himself.
Right.
That's interesting. And there is some appeal to that.
Sure, but that part
but
of it is
you're not a good
like,
comedian if you do that. You're just a clown.
Yeah, that part of it is like the real drug kind of reward of it, like the real kind of shooting heroin. Like,
yeah,
it'll make you feel better, but it's also damaging to you in the long run.
Yeah, like a real screamathon. And then truthful things is the biggest challenge at all, because like on stage in a made-up environment, can you say what's really true? That's the whole game. That's the whole trick of everything.
Right.
It's very easy to say what you think you should say, what TV shows have trained us to expect, but mm-hmm. like to say what's honest is like it's difficult.
Well, it's difficult to override the desire to get a laugh right away, to get a laugh like immediately right away, to override that desire and just get to that point where you're doing what you think is funny.
Yeah.
You know, you're playing honestly and truthfully. And just knowing that if you commit to an idea, then the laughs will come, you know?
Yeah, it's sort of like a big test is if something happens in an improv scene and you know that in a bad sitcom it would go a certain way and then it doesn't go that way, that's usually the sign of an improv team that is confident and in control of the way. So, like, there's a blind date. Let's say a blind date is happening in an improv scene.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the sitcom way to go is the person doesn't match what they said in their profile and they've been lying about it and something goes horribly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But like what, I mean, and of course that could be a great improv scene also.
Sure.
But a certain test would be the actors are heads up enough that they've made a particular choice about themselves. Something else happens that's funny. They do match their profile. They do kind of like each other all right mm-hmm. in the way that maybe a blind date or someone you've been set up with wasn't a completely terrible idea.
Right.
But like they make some awkward discovery that you didn't see coming and like is really hilarious. Oh, I your team did one I think like this a long time ago. It was the Transformers date scene. Was it Jen Bartels and Hal Phillips were on a date and Jen was like a robot cyborg or something. And they were having like a nice honest conversation, but then like the restaurant had the arch enemy of the robot.
Yeah, yeah.
Was there to hunt it down.
Right.
And so they had like a battle, but Hal and Jen are still trying to have their nice date amidst that battle. Like they're still trying to connect as people.
Mm-hmm.
It was like hilarious. It was such a and all the specifics of the way they were trying to talk to each other on a date were very true to things you say when you're meeting somebody on a date, like kind of awkwardly trying to have things in common. Meanwhile, there's like a robot battle going on.
Yeah, so it's not just like this thing, like there's nothing all that unusual really. When you get down to it, there's nothing really all that unusual about
the biggest laughs
somebody
were
who
like,
shows up to a date and doesn't match their profile.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, what are we discovering? What else are we discovering about that? What is really, how do you react to that?
Yeah. So I don't know, like being able to not just fall for the cliche thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe that my example was robots having a fight rest.
Well,
but
it was a great example.
It was more honest than anyway, so that's like a tricky thing to do. Like, no one's gonna remember if you just reenact the plot of a Three's Company episode.
Right.
They're not gonna remember.
And if it's an audience, you know, if you have an audience that's coming to see an improv show who, as you said, have never seen improv before.
Right.
You know, they don't care about the conventions of improv. They want to see a funny show.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, they don't care how that's true. Like,
yeah.
In a way, like what I'm saying is a little bit wrongheaded because they don't give a shit. They just want to laugh.
Right. And it's the difference between look at us, we're doing an improv show.
Yeah.
And look at us, we are taking your life and mirroring it.
Yeah.
And showing you what is fun and funny and hilarious about these things that we all
encounter.
I mean,
the reason the whole theater exists is because the UCB4 did amazing improv shows.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they are hilarious. Like, to this day, DCM, when the UCB perform, the audience is filled with people who do not normally watch improv. They just know that these people are funny, this show is good.
Right.
Like, and that's what everybody should be aspiring to, is like, make your show so funny, people don't care if it's improv or what. Like, they just want to go because
yeah.
they know it's going to be good.
You have good, strong ideas, fun, kind of universal ideas
yeah.
that appeal to everybody.
Like, you're using the tools of improv.
Right.
But the audience doesn't need to know what's going on under the hood. They just know that there are funny scenes happening with good actors on stage.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, really, in a way, all improv should be done like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is that so much of improv is done for other improvisers that, like, a lot of the – I mean, I'm as guilty on both ends of this, but a lot of the laughs come from, like, knowing the improv convention that is thwarting the person.
Right.
Like, you know, if you're seeing an improv show and any character in a scene says, well, I don't want to ask questions, but I want to do this, and that gets a laugh, that's from an improv student who's been told, don't ask questions in your improv scene.
Right.
But that's not a real laugh.
All you're doing is playing the improv conventions. If
yeah,
you're doing
playing
that
the game
stage.
Of improv conventions.
Right. You're not playing what the reality of this – you're not committing to this character that you've chosen to be or that someone's endowed you with.
So let's say a couple things that matter. Like, using the suggestion matters. The audience pays a huge amount of attention to what you do with the suggestion. If they've
sure.
never seen improv before and the only thing they give you is one word at the top of the show – all they're looking for is how are you using that. They
right.
don't notice anything else until that's addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that suggestion should be used early and obviously. It should be like, it should answer the question, how are you using the suggestion, very early, because until you answer it, I don't think they're paying that much attention to other things.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's a super loaded suggestion. I saw a Ruben Williams show 2 weeks ago, and the suggestion was something crazy loaded, like gay dinosaurs at the Jersey Shore. That was the suggestion. And the audience, Ruben did a mono scene that was, or not a mono scene, this was the first half. They did a montage that was, they did a Jurassic Park scene where the dinosaurs were gay. Like, they hit it very directly in the first scene. It was really funny, but it also just got it out of the, and then they were inspired by ideas from that first scene.
Mm-hmm.
They got away from it and went to other things throughout the show, but, like, they used it. Like, you can't dodge the suggestion.
Right.
And the audience won't like you if you don't use their suggestion.
Mm-hmm. And there's also, like, that makes me think of some, there's some shows in the city that don't take suggestions, like TJ and Dave.
Right.
Is you know, those guys are kind of legendary
the best. Yeah,
Chicago
like
improvisers.
Amazing improvisers,
yeah.
Great shows.
They don't take a suggestion. They just
well, in a way,
out.
That's fine, too. Like, then
right.
you're not setting up an expectation to meet.
That's true. And what works so well about their show is that they early and decidedly commit to what they're doing. Like, they make discoveries about who they are, who their relationship is, in very kind of simple ways.
Yeah.
You know? And they act the shit out of their scenes. That's another big thing, too.
Yeah, being committed and really – and not winking and not betraying that you're making stuff up is big.
Mm-hmm.
You can get laughs off of shrugging your shoulders and winking to the audience that you're just making it up.
Right. But who the fuck wants
to
do that?
I've certainly done that, but then your show is – capped in terms of how good it can be.
Yeah, you're setting that expectation for, like, this is the thing that I'm going to
reward
matter.
You with.
This doesn't
matter. This doesn't count. Right.
Yeah.
So, so making choices early.
Yeah.
Like, deciding early what's going on is another big thing to get, like, the audience cannot pay attention to any funny thing you're saying or that's happening until they just know what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, the ability to make simple establishing choices is a huge muscle.
Mm-hmm.
Even as simple as, like, okay, these are two friends carpooling to work, gives you like 45 seconds of time.
Yeah, because it's those simple ideas that people really respond to, right? It's
start as simple as possible is a thing. I mean, people, they don't need like a crazily complicated comedic idea to start with.
Right. So people don't want to see the gymnastics. They just want to see life. They want to see little slices from their life made hilarious. Right? Is that oversimplifying it too much? I mean, I'm kind of just tossing that out there, but it's...
No, I think that's right. How about the opening? The opening is a weird thing. Like, we do that in Herald Night, and not every weekend team does an opening all the time, rarely. Mm-hmm. Like I said, Chiruru does an interview for their first half.
Yeah.
And then they get a line to move.
And Ruben Williams
half.
Used to do that as well. They used to do...
they used to do interview openings. To go through. ASCAT does monologues.
Right.
What other openings have worked for, like... I mean, they're choosing... You know, these shows are designed to be hits, to get crowds in and please them.
Right.
And entertain them. So you want openings that are very accessible.
Well, what works the most is engaging the audience in some way. Because you look at Facebook, the show in L.A. Like,
yeah.
They get somebody up and they go through their Facebook profile and ask them questions about it.
Right.
So that person is involved. The audience is involved because
via that person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they're seeing the information be developed and built.
Yeah. And the same thing with, you know, Ruben Williams used to do the As Seen on TV show, and they would go through somebody's wallet and ask them questions about that. So it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
ASCAT with monologues, somebody is telling a story. A likable person is telling stories to the audience, and then the audience gets to see immediately that those monologues deconstructed and dissected.
Right. Whatever your opening is, it has to be clearly connected to what follows it and where it comes from. It's a suggestion. Dorf and Gausses did a two-person show. They would get a suggestion and then each do three confessions based on the suggestion. They would they get a suggestion of something, I don't, you know, like safe or something. And then Dorf would step forward and just in character make a statement very clearly inspired by the word safe. Something like, you know, I keep all my money at home so the government can't touch it. Just something like that. And then Gausses would say something, some kind of one, you know, I didn't talk to them about how they did the show. This is just from watching it.
Sure.
Then Gausses would say like some sentence inspired by the word safe. And then Dorf would go, they'd say three things each and then do a bunch of scenes. And they would just very clearly be the people they had been making those sentences. Or, like, you would clearly see how the scenes came from those sentences.
Mm-hmm.
So you're with – it's accessible.
Like, yeah.
The suggestion informs this accessible opening, which inspires the scenes. You can see the guts of that.
Yeah, you're right there. You see how it directly affects what's going on. So is it too broad to say that the difference between what works in an improv show for people who've never seen an improv show and what works in an improv show for people who are very familiar with the mechanics of an improv show to say that you know what? I completely forgot what I was going to say.
Well, I got a new
up
one.
That point. here's my point. Is it too broad to say that those differences are really kind of the differences between being a sophisticated improviser and being not necessarily an unsophisticated improviser, but somebody who is not quite committing to the way that they're playing.
I don't know. I think the phase, maybe this doesn't answer your question, but I think the phase I see people go through, if they become an improviser, then they go through a phase of just being bold and silly in a way. Like they use the power of just knowing they're making stuff up on stage and they kind of get laughs off at just being silly and kind of crazy. And it works to a limited degree. But then they get more confident and they chill out and they just start saying real things and insightful things about what's going on. Like, they're able to react more closer to real life, but then, ironically, they get funnier when that happens.
Sure.
So, like, I just see it as an evolution that happens, given how much time you've spent doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a question.
Sure.
Two things. I think that Ruru's mono scene works so well because the mono scene is an accessible thing. You're not using tag outs. There's no opening. It's like an improvised play that takes place in one period of time. So, like, there's no conventions that don't exist in any play you could see anywhere in your whole life.
Right.
People enter and leave the stage. They're talking to each other. They stay the same character for a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So like,
and they're also committed and sophisticated improvisers.
The acting is fantastic, of course.
Yeah. They have simple, clear ideas. They communicate with each other.
Established very early.
Yeah.
Like, you know what's going on with somebody very soon after they're in the scene.
Mm-hmm.
My question for you, why? But Ruru also has ridiculous things happen every show.
Right.
crazy things. Like they've had people go into Narnia and come back as a lion. They've had like white tigers enter. I mean, they've had like just ridiculous things happen, and the shows are great. You tell me why that. Why doesn't that break the rule of playing it real and keeping it simple?
Because it's justified within the universe that they set up. You know, it's if that stuff. Well, first of all, those guys are all great improvisers who have been improvising for a very long time, have been improvising together for a very long time.
Yeah.
So they know how to take any idea, treat it truthfully, and sew it into the fabric of the larger improv form.
They have the great sense of what aspect of what was just said is bullshit given what we know.
Right.
Like, they don't, they call each other out on stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, you just got back from Narnia, like, somebody will come back from Narnia as a lion, and they won't question that, but they'll be like, you're not hungry? What, you've been out there for, in the woods of Narnia, you don't want something to eat?
Right.
And then the other person will be like, I guess I could use something to eat.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious to realize, oh, yeah, that is what would be going on. Mm-hmm. They know the right thing to focus on.
Yeah, they know how to react truthfully to each other in those moments rather than, like, treating it, blowing it out of proportion in some weird way that is not true to the tone that they've already established.
It's not empty noise. They're not just being crazy for craziness. They're being crazy because they're interested in the idea and its consequences.
Right. They're honoring these moves that you know, their teammates have made.
We should say that we have everything figured out.
Yeah, we're experts.
We don't make a wrong move.
No.
You and me.
Oh, no, no.
Oh, my God, we're so
yeah,
perfect.
I mean, everything that I do on Harold Knight is like...
It's like just textbook.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Me too. I mean, the Stepfathers, after every show, Delaney's like, how can you teach me? And I'm like, later. Leave me alone.
I have never made a listening error.
Oh, yeah. I don't interrupt anybody.
That's right.
I'm probably the best actor that's ever been in New
definitely.
York City.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I do think it's like, that's a final test. Can your team entertain an audience that's never seen improv and be funny? Mm-hmm. Like, until you can do that, like, you're still learning how to do it.
Yeah.
Either as a team or individually.
Right.
And that's like, the UCB, you can put those four anywhere, and they'll do a show that makes the room laugh.
Yeah.
Harold Knight, the middle of a bar in America, like, they came to New York City, no one knew them. They built this whole theater just by the first big building block was doing a great improv show.
Yep.
Every time they were in the room. So
I also agree with you that I think these are the kinds of things that come with time. Almost nobody with a few
you can't just a few willpower notable yourself into getting there.
Right. You can't just show up, with a few notable exceptions, can't just show up and be amazing.
Amazing, right.
Or you can't just have a team that's put together and become amazing.
Nope, it doesn't happen.
You know, you have to study it and kind of hone it and keep practicing and keep working at it.
You have to evolve a sense of what is bullshit in this environment of a stage.
And what is bullshit to you and what is your true, honest point of view
that's true.
And
like,
personality.
Somebody else making a choice that you would make, it sounds less or more true just because of the person doing it.
Yeah. What is, like, I'm just doing this because we haven't gotten a laugh in a while and I'm trying to get a laugh. Or what are these moves that I'm making just because I feel like, well, I'm on stage, I need to get a laugh. And what are the, when have you gotten to the point where you're like, this is me, this is what I think is funny.
I'm reacting to the moment for real, given everything that we know.
Right.
This isn't faked.
Yeah. Yeah, and that stuff takes a long time.
Yeah, and still doesn't happen all the time.
No, it's amazing.
That anything ever works.
Exactly, given the fact that this is improvised, and you go out on stage with a group of people who
with
have
nothing.
No idea what's going to happen.
It's a miracle that it works
it's
at all.
It's amazing that it's not a clusterfuck every time.
Yeah.
It is a testament to the sophistication of this art form and the genius of the people who do it.
It's true.
That you can make anything coherent.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
A testament also to the system that, to the philosophy, the UCB philosophy, you know, of like.
Dell's philosophy, really. Like, if you play it smarter and you play it real, it gets funnier.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot higher and it works better.
Yeah.
Is like a non-intuitive thing that works like a charm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say, I'm just as confused about this issue as
I
was.
Yeah, I mean, I thought we would have a lot better ideas when we started this.
Yeah.
We don't know anything.
No, we have
Dear
not,
Lord.
We've not solved anything.
Oh, yeah.
It is our, I feel like I come into this podcast like feeling the
I'm
weight
so
of.
I'm so confident at the beginning of it. I'm like, oh, this one we have real advice for.
Yeah.
At the end, I'm like, we don't know anything.
Yeah.
I feel
the weight of responsibility, like to
we're
solve
writing it
everybody's
into stone.
Problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's
we don't solve anything.
No.
Please email us with things that we should talk about and what we're missing. We need your input.
Yeah.
I guess that's the end of our show for this week.
I think so.
So we want to thank Andy Rocco for coming in and talking about his hipster show.
That was a great interview.
Great interview. Love Andy Rocco.
Yeah.
And the shows we mentioned at the top, please consider checking them out. We think they are great shows.
Who are you going to give that stuffed animal that you won to at the beginning of the show?
I'm going to, at the next improv show I do, I'm going to give it to the person who laughs the hardest.
Okay, so check us out at boards.ucbcomedy.com. Tell your friends about this podcast. Thanks, Will. You were great.
So were you, John. Nice job.
See you next week.
See you next week.
The UCB Theater New York podcast is brought to you by a generous donation from the Little Donnie Foundation.